50 biggest misconceptions in science. You may well be familiar with the fact that lightning, contrary to popular saying, often strikes the same place twice. But this is just the tip of the iceberg when it comes to what many of us wrongly believes about the way the world works. Don't believe what you read online, myths, word of mouth, or misremembered facts from school. We're bombarded with misconceptions about the science we come into contact with every day. However, a new book will uncover the most popular myths to help you avoid contributing to the perpetuation of these misunderstandings. Delighted to be joining me live on the line from somewhere in the UK, author of Lightning Often Strikes Twice, Brian Clegg. Brian, good morning to you.
Good morning.
Good to have you. Whereabouts in the UK are you, by the way, today?
I'm in sunny Swindon.
Sunny Swindon. Oh, to be in sunny Swindon on a day after whatever happened. There was some sport on last night, apparently. I missed it, but there you go. So lightning often strikes twice. Now, what inspired you to write the book? Is it the fact that because in this new super highway of misinformation that we seem to have, people are continually muddling their facts and basically mucking up?
It's certainly true that there's a lot of misinformation about, some of it intentional, some of it accidental. And what I'm not trying to do here is kind of get into the politics of this. It's really very much about the fun of it, about the things that we get wrong. As you said, some of it's just myths. Some of it is stuff that we were taught and actually it turns out to be wrong. And some of it is just stuff that seems to come out of the woodwork. But it's all fascinating facts about the world around us that we don't quite get right.
So, I mean, let's start with the title of the book. Was this the original spark, excuse the pun, was this the thing that lit up the idea, the eureka moment when you kept saying, well, lightning never strikes twice?
It's partly that. It's not actually my favourite, which I perhaps come on to in a moment. But the thing about the lightning one is, of course, it is literally a statement. You go back into medieval times, they actually used to put stones with holes in them up their chimneys because they thought these stones had been struck by lightning. And so once you've been struck by lightning, stick up the chimney, you won't get any more lightning. But the fact is, the Empire State Building, for instance, big pointy thing, gets struck by lightning many times a year. And there's even one person who's been struck seven times, an individual that's actually been struck by lightning seven times. So there's no way.
Isn't that the individual who works somewhere in the forestry there? So he's not like, if Siri unlucky, he's not like walking around and there's a lightning, a Thor goes, right, I don't like you. He's actually working in the forest somewhere in the state.
That's right, yeah. He is out there in the wilds. But even so, he's pretty lucky in some ways that he's survived those things.
And it makes me wonder, it makes me think back. Well, whenever I hear these things about misconceptions, for example, if you are a fan of Rowan Atkinson, and I know I'm going off on a tangent here, but bear with me, Brian, there was the fact that Baldrick in The Blackadder Goes Forth had a bullet which he'd written his name on because he reckoned that there was always a bullet with your name on it, which would get you. So if you actually had the bullet with your name on it and you carried it around, you wouldn't get shot by it. So that's a misconception as well, I suppose.
That's right, yeah. And in fact, all these things often are based on something almost the way we want things to be rather than necessarily the world works.
How do you whittle down then sort of to 50, and how do you go about getting this, getting this in a sort of an order, if you like?
It's really a mixture, an interesting mix. It's not necessarily something that has any particular order. You can imagine it, right? It's 50 little articles on the different things. And whittling down really was looking for things that are fun, things that surprise you, things that are just going to be interesting. The kind of thing, when you're reading the book, you look around to find somebody to say, good grief, have you seen this? Look at this. Wow. I never thought that was true.
So we've got lightning. So lightning does strike more because, as you said so eloquently, the Empire State Building, big pointy thing, for example. What were the other ones? I mean, tip of the iceberg. Presumably that's just that. There is a tip to the iceberg, isn't there? So what other misconceptions do we get wrong in sort of everyday parlance?
I think one of my favourites actually is the matter of toast falling butter side down. Because the thing about this is, what's the myth is that it's not true. It actually is true that toast is more likely to fall butter side down. And one of your competitors, somebody called the BBC, did actually try out an experiment where they flipped a piece of toast, like flipping a coin.
Yeah.
And they found it was 50-50. Good guy either way. But the trouble is, when toast falls, you don't generally flip it in the air like a coin. What happens is it slides off your plate or it slides off the edge of the worktop. And basically the speed at which toast will typically turn as it falls, it's only got time to turn once. So it turns and it starts butter side up. You don't generally hold your toast butter side down. So it ends up butter side down. So it really is more likely to happen. I just love the way that works against our common sense, if you like.
But if you were to drop your toast from a height that gave it time to rotate in the air, for example, from the top of the Empire Strike Building, although when it hit the ground, obviously it would splatter over a large area, then we could see that we didn't always lose. You know, it wasn't going to land butter side down most of the time.
That's right. But of course, you know, in practice, generally speaking, you're not flinging it off the Empire State Building. Although that does actually bring up another fact that's in there, because there's this old story that if you drop a coin off the top of the Empire State Building and it hits somebody, it's going to kill them. And actually, that's not true either.
Really? I would have thought from the great height, though, the coin is falling, that it would have such speed, it would be going at such a rate of knots that it would, it would basically slice through somebody like the proverbial through butter.
That's right. And in fact, if you dropped a coin with no air and it just fell, then it hits somebody probably with about a quarter of the amount of oomph a bullet does. So enough to cause serious damage. But the fact is, there is air. And as we all know, you know, you drop stuff in air, the air gets in the way. That's why parachutes work. And it slows down the rate it's going to accelerate. It comes to a point where it can't go any faster. And in fact, a scientist has generously done this experiment for it. He basically got a weather balloon, put a whole basket of coins in this weather balloon, took it up to the height of the Empire State Building and dropped the coins on his head. And he said it felt like heavy rain. No more than that. So actually, it just isn't going to happen.
Really? I mean, I'd like to salute the guy who did that, because that's, you know, that is basically, you know, that's pushing the bounds of science and experimentation.
I think he did a sensible calculation first. He was not just doing it. Oh, let's try it and see what happens.
I just had a WhatsApp coming in here who's saying this is about the butter side up. It says, put the toast on a cat and it will always land butter side up because cats always land on their feet.
Yep, if it's attached to a cat. And that is that's a genuine one in the sense that cats have, this isn't one in the book, but yeah. Do cats have this ability? Basically, because they twist both half the front and back half of their body in the air. So they can actually fall quite quickly. And in fact, I think it was in the 19th century, a guy called James Clerk Maxwell, who was famous for his work on radio and electromagnetism, did actually experiment this when he was at university, dropping cats at different heights to see what the actual height was from which a cat could first turn over. And I think it was about 4 feet.
Right. And it let's not try that at home, kids. I know it's the summer holidays, but please, let's not go there.
So, not recommended.
You know, Brian, as somebody who works with science in science, is misconception, are we getting muddled then a lot by the word of mouth, the social medias, and should we be a little concerned about this, or is it better to have people getting into some sort of science at least to start as a starting point, so that they can then go further and research and find out where they're perhaps not going wrong?
Yeah, I'd much rather people were reading around it, finding out more. But I think the main thing is, like news for that matter, frankly, I would not rely on social media necessarily, for instance, as a good source of your science, unless it's coming from a sensible source like a university or whatever. But certainly there's plenty written about science. It's well worth reading around the items. And there's a lot of good science communication these days that's fun, that's enjoyable. It doesn't have to be the kind of stuff we had at school.
Is that the sort of thing that's perhaps one of the things with science, is that people think it's very dry, it's very, it's chemistry, it's physics, it's, biology, okay, there's a frog in there somewhere, could get exciting. But otherwise, people think, oh, blimey, it's, apart from double maths, I mean, that was perhaps the thing in chemistry, perhaps, we could muck with magnesium and gamma each other. But, I mean, apart from that, people tend to look at science as being very dull and boring, where in fact it is one of the creative arts, let's face it.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really weird thing because I talk in junior schools and secondary schools. And when you go to junior school, everybody's excited about science. All the kids are excited about science. They love it. They're really excited. And then when you get to about 12, 13, that kind of age, suddenly it's not cool to be excited about stuff anymore and interested. And it really turns down. So I think it's partly coming just from the social pressure almost, you know, that it's not cool to be interested anymore. But also, frankly, the way we teach science in secondary school, I think, could do with a real revamp. You know, you can teach really interesting stuff. The stuff I do, the stuff that's called popular science, is based about giving the right kind of context, talking about people, talking about interesting things that happen, not just about doing a calculation as how hard do you have to push something to push it uphill or whatever.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it, though, with any education? I mean, nothing exists in the vacuum, as I always keep saying. And if you look at the characters behind the former, but I think at that point it becomes, when you get to 11, 12, you do this will date us, but you know, you did your 11 plus, for example, and it was all formula and calculations and that sort of slight whiff of chemicals from Block E in the grammar school. But if you look at the people who make, you know, who make the strides in science, and you look at the fantastic stories behind science, and you look at, for example, you know, I mean, a couple of years ago we had the anniversary of the moon landings and the Apollo and the amazing stories behind, that's all science based. You can't get much more science than NASA, and the personalities and the mavericks behind that, and the thinking on their feet, and rather than just going, okay, get the textbooks out, kids, and learn this formula.
Well, that's right. I mean, the kind of science education we do in schools typically seems to be to give people the basics to become scientists. But the fact is, the vast majority of people are not going to become scientists. I think it'd be much better, certainly up to, you know, GCSE level or equivalent, if we were just going to give them, if you like, the science background, but not worry too much about them being able to do all the sums and that kind of thing. And yes, you could introduce that at A level if they're going on to do serious science. But then I think you get a much broader picture of what science was about if we could change that way that we put it across.
Back to the book, because we're going off on something.
Sure, sure.
It's quite interesting. What's give me another one that pull another one out of the proverbial hat that people get wrong and that infuriates you, or that makes you go, that's not right.
Yeah, I don't know if it's about infuriating, but one that I know I've had people say to me, I'm sure that's true, they told me that at school, is something that I was certainly taught at junior school, which is on your tongue, that there are different bits of the tongue that do different flavors. So there's a bit that does salt, a bit that does the sugar taste, a bit that does the sweet, a bit that does the sour, and they're actually separate areas of your tongue. This is totally fictional. This has never been thought scientifically whatsoever. It was a misinterpretation start of the 20th century. Somebody was writing about something totally different, and somebody misinterpreted it, put these little maps of how the tongue tastes, different tastes. It just isn't true. You know, your taste buds are spread across your tongue. They do all five of the main sort of flavors and possibly one or two other things as well. It's chemical reactions, actually, that is how you taste it. What's happening is the different things in there that do special chemical reactions. But it's nothing to do with being laid out in this kind of weird map that you see.
Otherwise, if you burnt one bit of your tongue, I can't taste salt for the next couple of days.
Yeah, that's right. In fact, I'm sure when we were at junior school, they did this thing where they tried to get us to sort of prod different bits of our tongue. We were supposed to taste different tastes from the prodding, which makes no sense because, as I say, it is chemical. But even if that weren't the case, it just doesn't work.
I'm sure prodding each other on our tongues now would probably be banned anyway, under health and safety, to put it mildly.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. To be fair, some of the things that probably have been banned for health and safety, it's a bit of a shame. Like, we used to have explosions in chemistry, which unfortunately they're not allowed to do anymore.
Well, absolutely. So, I mean, there is a serious purpose behind this, isn't there, Brian? What do you hope that people are going to be taking from this and looking at?
I think it's mostly about just thinking about things a little bit more. You know, don't just take something, you read it, you think it's true. Just thinking about it a little bit more, perhaps reading round it a little bit more, finding out a bit more. Because I think one of the problems with the whole fake news thing and all that kind of thing, you read one thing, it supports what you think is true. You think, tick, yeah, this is great. But science isn't about supporting what we think is true. It's about actually trying to get beneath what we think and finding what the reality is about. And I think these things, you know, it is mostly for fun, but I think it has that underlying importance of getting to the root of what's really happening.
So just leave me with one more, so that today, somewhere in Spain, somebody's going to walk in and have their tapa and their caña this afternoon, and they go, do you know what? Today I heard this, you know, I know that lightning can strike more. Can leopards change their spots, by the way? That's the other one. No, presumably they can't. That one does ring true, doesn't it?
Well, it depends. I suppose as they grow up, yes, they do change. Okay, with time.
Leave me. That would be the second most, was it, after lightning striking twice. Leopards don't change their spots. Leave me with another one with which our audience can baffle their friends and quite frankly bemuse their enemies.
Yeah, one of my favourites, because it's been used in all sorts of things in a humorous way, actually, is this idea that goldfish have a 3 or 5 second memory. Absolutely untrue. As far as we can see, although nobody can pin it down, it was based on an advertising campaign from the 60s. It was just totally made up. And yet it became part of the popular culture that goldfish don't. Now, anybody who actually has a fish pond will know, you know, goldfish, you go and shake your food by the side, they'll come to you. And that's because they remember. They know perfectly well. And there's lots of tests being done that show it's just totally fake.
Oh, I would have thought the goldfish would have come and gone into that because they just saw something. What's that up there, you know, on the surface? So they recognise the... Well, presumably, because if they didn't recognise the food, they'd all starve to death, wouldn't they? They'd be like, oh, well, I'm not sure what's coming from the heavens.
Yeah, but it's not just that. They will also say, for instance, if you feed them 3 o'clock in the afternoon, they will, about that time, they'll start coming to the place you normally feed them, that kind of thing. But they've done tests with mazes and all sorts of things, and it's just totally fictional. But it's just so widespread, this idea of, you know, goldfish having a 3 second or 5 second memory that people can be quite surprised.
So therefore, if there's anybody out there who is treating their goldfish badly with the thing that they won't remember in a minute's time, be very, very careful out there. Perhaps not. Do elephants always? Do elephants have long memories? By the way, do you know that one?
Well, certainly, I mean, I don't know about elephants never forgetting, but certainly, you know, they are intelligent animals. They have pretty good memories, I think.
Okay, well, anybody with an aquarium there who's feeling slightly devious and devilish this morning, look out, because the goldfish will remember and Nemo may take his revenge. But this book is called A Lightning Often Strikes Twice. It's by Brian Clegg, who we've been speaking to this morning. Brian, if people want to find you on that their internet thing or the web, where can they find you? Do you do the social media? Is there a website? Where can people get in touch and find out some more fascinating facts?
Yep, the easiest thing is my website, which has all the social media connections and so forth. So it's Brian Clegg, BrianClegg.net, BrianClegg.net.
The book is also going to be available as a virtual download from our own virtual bookstore. But this book is called Lightning Often Strikes Twice. Be careful to all the aquarium owners out there. Brian Clegg, it's been an absolute pleasure today.
Thank you.